Okay, so Eddie, you're 81 years old and still extremely active. Can you tell me about some of the kind of most amazing events or physical challenges that you've kind of got up to in the last 10 years?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't do any physical activity at all, really, until I was 52. Three children, full-time social work, so not a lot of time. And then did get into running and slowly increased distances. Started off with a half marathon around the Nottingham University buildings where I'd been with my husband at Nottingham Uni. And then built steadily up. Didn't start any triathlon until I was 60. When I more or less learnt to swim, I could only just get across the width of the pool doing breaststroke up until then. So started doing triathlon then. And then since then, have done six Ironman triathlons, so quite long distances.
I feel like the most impressive thing that I've read is that you're the oldest British woman to complete an Ironman triathlon, at, I believe, age 74. Would you say that this is the most thing you're most proud of achieving kind of sports and exercise wise since you kind of got into this whole crazy world?
Yes, I think so. Just to be able to swim that distance, I feel quite proud of myself. Great fun. And yes, I did end up going to Kona as well, which is, you know, the sort of ultimate Ironman opportunity. That was also great fun, but I've always found the swimming hard wherever I've been.
So how do you feel at your age, you know, being so active, like mentally and physically? How do you feel? I'm sure it's maybe perhaps a little bit different to other people your age.
I have limitations, you know, partly as a result of running from the age of 50 to 80. I don't have an ACL in either knee now. So I'm more limited to walking fast, but even that's fun to get outdoors and walk along the Thames. I just love that opportunity to get out there.
Well, how much exercise do you think the typical person your age in Britain does? You must have spoke to lots of people, you know, trying to do a bit more. Like, do you have a sense of how much exercise, yeah, an 81-year-old female or male in Britain does per week?
I don't know the exact stats. What I do know is how vital it is to have our ageing population, which is, of course, an increasing ageing population, as active as possible, because it does, without any doubt, reduce the cost to NHS, to social care, if we are more active.
Why do you think it is that when people maybe reach this kind of age, just, you know, do radically fall off the amount of the exercise compared to when they're younger? Is it, do you think, a natural thing? Is it something people assume they, you know, it's kind of the normal way to be at that age? Like, why do you think that it's kind of, you know, below, I guess, the extent to which you think someone should be exercising ideally?
I think there is that assumption. There's also this sort of social isolation of older people who may be stuck more in the home, which is one of the primary reasons we set up the charity Silverfit, to promote physical activity for older people in 11 different London boroughs now, and still looking at ways in which we may expand the Silverfit charity.
What's like a typical week like for you? You said to me earlier, you know, before this conversation, you're really split between training for the Race Across America at the moment. You also do all this charity work, and just kind of keep fit and socialize yourself. Like, what is a typical week like for you, if there is a kind of typical week? Perhaps there's not.
Yes, I mean, my average working hours is something like 30, 35 hours a week. I'm usually training for about 20-ish, although perhaps a little bit more recently with my 45 minute sessions on the bike, because that's what I'm going to be doing in Race Across America. So I've got an indoor bike, a turbo that I love getting on, and I use the Zwift Wi-Fi system, so you can see yourself or your own avatar sort of going around London or going around Central Park in New York. It's just great fun, and you can see people overtaking you and perhaps giving you a message to ride on. Great fun.
How far do you walk each day? Do you walk an hour or a couple, like, each day? Like, how often are we going?
Varies according to how much I'm cycling as well. Not swimming quite so much at the moment, because I think my next objective in swimming terms would be London Triathlon, but that's still a fair way off in August. So it is a focus on outdoor and indoor cycling at the moment.
I'm also interested in other things you do to look after yourself. So you know, exercise as well as like your diet, maybe consumption of alcohol, like your sleeping habits or patterns, maybe any supplements you take. Can you run us through anything else you do to kind of keep yourself feeling as good as possible?
Yes, I mean, I think I do eat reasonably well, with a sort of emphasis on protein as well, which I know is important. I always have a good breakfast that I enjoy and make sure I always have. Alcohol, yes, I mean, about to stop alcohol completely until I finish Race Across America. but that's also often socialising, isn't it? You know, and that's an opportunity I wouldn't like to miss. I do enjoy the opportunity of going out with friends and having a drink.
Yeah, interesting. I think because some people may expect that you've kind of given up alcohol or something in the last couple of decades since you got into all this extreme sport, but you don't. You still have a bit every now and then and enjoy that with socialising.
Absolutely.
Yeah. When you cross the finish line, I guess that's...
Yes, that would also be true.
Okay, great. So I just kind of wanted to go back a little bit and go through your story a little bit more. So you touched upon, I believe when you were around 50 was when you started running, you know, kind of seriously for the first time. And so before 50, throughout your life, were you pretty relatively inactive then?
I played a tiny bit of netball when I was at university. So right back to when I was 20, played a tiny bit of netball after that, but then stopped. So no physical activity really at all. Bringing up three children and 50 years of social work is quite challenging. So no, I certainly didn't have the time to exercise. And, you know, three kids who were reasonably physically active, and of course they've got to take them around in a car. There wasn't time for me, and I didn't miss it. You know, that wasn't something that I desperately missed at all.
Mm. So it really was a time thing. You didn't really believe anything too differently. You just were so busy. You didn't really find the time to exercise.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. Yeah.
Okay, and then when you're around 50 and started running, can you talk a bit about why exactly, yeah, you kind of got into it, and especially so in such a kind of, you know, big way?
Yeah, I was 52, exactly. I remember going up to watch a friend doing the half marathon all the way round Nottingham University past the areas where I'd lived, and coming back to my husband and saying, I'd love to do that marathon, half marathon, sorry. And he said, you couldn't even run 2K into Northampton. And that was so true. And I think it was that challenge that, yes, I will.
Ever since then, have you found your kind of interest and motivation ever wavering every now and then? Or have you always been kind of full on since 52, since that age, going at it really hard?
No, I haven't been full on in any way. And in running the charity, we've set up a whole range of different activities, from Bollywood dancing to fitness to Nordic walking, of things that are fun. And I think that's so important for our aging population. You know, I've been to conferences where I've been scheduled to do a talk, and you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, no one has used the word fun at all. And I think it's so important to motivate our aging population and getting them to have fun, to enjoy the social life of whatever they're also doing, as well as being physically active and perhaps walking or dancing or whatever.
Yeah, this is something I've seen you say, reading about things online about the exercise you encourage older people to do is that, you know, it's not just good mentally and physically, it's good for their social life, especially when you can be a bit isolated when you're older. So this is like a key part of it, really.
It's absolutely essential. In Silverfit, we've always kept quite good data, and we know that what keeps people coming and is actually the social element. They're very clear about that.
And making it fun as well. Sometimes people fear exercise just being the last thing you want to do, but you try to avoid that.
Yeah. Yes, we have what we call in Silverfit a social sandwich. People meet up socially. They do an activity for about 3/4 of an hour to an hour, and then they come back for a cup of coffee or tea and socialise again. And it's absolutely key. Mm.
And then after you kind of really got into things at age 52, is your first big event a triathlon at age 62?
No, I was doing marathon. I did London Marathon. can't remember how many times, but again, I absolutely love it.
How many Ironman triathlons roughly do you think you've done?
I've completed 6 and I've failed 2. I failed to finish the last one I did in Lanzarote.
What about the one before that? I'm just intrigued. What would achieve so many? What kind of got you there on the other one? The reason you didn't finish?
Oh, yes. I mean, that was goggle problem when I was swimming over the most wonderful rocks and thing. And then, yes, my goggles were not working properly. And I came out, I sort of staggered out of the swim, ready to go on the bike. And I really was in no state to get on a bike. They put me in an ambulance instead and took me to the local hospital.
Glad you're right now. Can you say a little bit about what training is involved to prep for an event like this? I'm sure most people watching maybe haven't done an Ironman triathlon. So what kind of training is involved? The exercise and maybe some of the other things, diet and so on. It'd be interesting to hear this.
I think you do need a bit of guidance as well. You know, Annie Emerson has coached me for a long time. Brian Welsh, who is helping me with Race Across America, has also set me a program, and I think that's quite helpful to have that sort of program. But looking online, there are plenty of opportunities to see training programs for specific events. And I think to do an element of strength training is vital too, as well as the actual cycling or swimming or biking. I think it is important to do some strength training.
Let's maybe take like an Ironman triathlon that you maybe did the best in. How many months before that do you start training?
It's at least, probably, I would say 6 months.
6 months, okay. And what maybe just say halfway through, what's the week look like? How much exercise are we talking? Every day, 6 days a week? How much a day?
Most days, and probably somewhere around 20, 25 hours a week.
25 hours a week, wow. Most days, so it's like we're talking 3 or 4 hours a day.
You're talking a fair amount of training, yeah. But you know, I love it.
Yeah. It's enjoyable. So a couple hours before work, and then some in the evening, something like this.
Yeah, every day. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And you enjoy that, yeah. So how was that experience of training? Some people would think this is the most gruesome thing they could ever imagine, but you find that an enjoyable thing to do, to add a bit to your day each day, and
yeah. No, I love both getting outdoors on my bike and Liv Giant have just given me a very nice new bike, so that's going to be fun too. But I enjoy cycling. I enjoy indoor cycling too. As I said, with the Zwift sort of technical computer alongside me and my avatar there, but actually I can also watch a bit of television at the same time. I don't have a lot of time mostly to watch the telly, but it's quite good when I'm on my indoor bike.
In some of these events, yeah, what do you often find is like the hardest period? Is it just quite naturally towards the end of it, or yeah, what were some of the tricky periods during a triathlon?
I think without doubt for me it's the point that you're increasing your swimming time. You know, if you're doing an Ironman, then we're practicing quite a long time swimming.
Swimming is it pretty often the least favourite event of the three?
Certainly for me it is, yes. I think if you've swum as a child, it's a huge, huge benefit. You know, you're water confident. It's much harder when you've not started until you were 60 odd.
And can you talk us through like what the experience is like of an event like that? How's it the day before, at the start and at the end, and the difficult points? Like, is it a real journey of emotions? How would you describe the day?
Yes, I mean, there's a huge amount of anxiety, but once you get there to register, you're part of a group. And I've always found, you know, whether it's marathons or triathlons, that people, even though I'm one of the people, slower people, perhaps at the back on the run, people so supportive. Aren't I lucky to be there?
So what's it like when you cross the line on these events? How does that feel?
Oh, fantastic. I've finished.
Did you take much of a break afterwards to relax and enjoy that? Or were you someone that would get straight back in training for a...
Oh, no. I think if, you know, after a serious race, you're quite tired, and I think your body is tired. So it is quite important to have a bit of rest. Yeah.
Would you say you've learned anything about yourself from doing all of these very difficult events?
Oh, I just think it's sociable and it's fun, and I will be quite sad at the point that I don't feel able to do any more activity. Yeah.
Okay, well, hopefully you've got a few more in you. Do you have anything lined up then after Race Across America in the back of your head that you think maybe you can get to?
Yes, I think London Triathlon, probably. I also want to go across to Paris and watch some of the Olympics too. I'm really keen to go and watch the triathlon and the 1500 metres and some of the other athletics in Paris, because I went to Rio and watched quite a lot of the Olympics there, and London was just fantastic.
Yeah, brilliant, fantastic. Yeah, I hope you managed to get there then. Okay, and yeah, I want to talk about the charity work you do as well. You've mentioned SilverFit, I've got the t-shirt on as well, I see. So can you tell us a little bit more about SilverFit, what it does, what kind of opportunities it offers people to exercise?
We started SilverFit in 2013 as part of the legacy of the London Olympics, recognising that, you know, that legacy would be to encourage more activity for older people. And I think London 2012 was just such a brilliant opportunity for the Olympic Games. It certainly motivated me to help other people get more active and increase the number of people. So what we then were looking at is what fun opportunities there were, what could we get people doing that they would really enjoy doing and have that social element, the social sandwich as we called it. And I think we've grown steadily since then. It's never been easy to get the funding that you need to organise it, because we also know from all the research that we can make the greatest difference in healthier ageing with those who can least afford to pay to go to a gym or pay a lot of money to come for a session. So we do spend a lot of time fundraising in order to keep the entry as cheaply as possible.
Yeah, for someone who doesn't know anything about the charity and kind of charity and non-profit kind of funding landscape, what would you say you've learned? It sounds very difficult to get money for these important causes. What is it kind of like out there, and how difficult is it?
I think Sport England have funded us in the past. We've had Awards for All and other funders, but I think now it is a lot more competitive than it used to be. I think the number of people seeking funds from the same funders is making it more difficult and challenging, and I don't think there's any doubt about that. And local authorities, whereas Haringey, Kingston, Southwark, Lambeth a bit, have funded us directly, then we know that local authorities are struggling far more. Yes, Croydon as well have given us funding in the past, but I think we're less likely to be able to turn to local authorities to fund us.
Clearly this work you've done with the charity is driven by something else you've done, I guess the whole other huge part of your life, which is the social work that you did. And you were a social worker for, I believe, over 50 years. Really interesting. Firstly, if someone's not exactly familiar with what that term means, what is social work?
Well, I'd been working both for local authorities, working with families and, with children. So, in fact, I'd not done any work with older people at all. My whole history was working with children, both children who were at home still and children who were in the care of the local authority. And sometimes children who were being fostered and adopted. So I ran a couple of adoption agencies at various points. It was a demanding but very satisfying career.
Yeah, you did it for 50 years. You must have found it very fulfilling. What do you think it is about you and your personality that drew you towards social work? Why are you the person that does that as opposed to something new, very different?
I was at university just at the very beginning of computers. I can remember in the economics department a tiny little room with the first computer. And I was fairly well trained. I'd done statistics and I could have gone into that world. I knew that. But my dad had been head of Boys Club Association. He'd also been chair of the juvenile bench, the magistrate's bench. So I'd grown up with a background of helping other people, you know, working to increase their opportunities too. So I think my decision in the end was, no, I'm not going techie, whether I could have done or not. I want my dad to be proud of me.
And what was it about social work that you really enjoyed and found so fulfilling?
Oh, over such a long period, there were clearly not so good times when it was really hard to be doing the best you possibly could for families to help them. Not an easy time always.
Yeah, and you speak about your dad, but another member of your family was also very interesting. Used to kind of look after Winston Churchill. Can you tell us a bit about this? Sorry.
Yes, my grandmother was the Winston Churchill's cook from 1943 to, I think, about 1969. I'm not brilliant on figures. But she worked at number 10 Downing Street. And I remember going as a 10-year-old to 10 Downing Street and sitting in the chair in the cabinet room there. And also to Chartwell as well, where, you know, that was a sort of country resort there. So I remember going to Chartwell as a child too. I think I haven't, I mean, although I've helped her write the cookery book, I mean, I'd sort of structured it, not actually written any of it, but she wrote a cookery book called Churchill Cookbook. I think that I never had those skills that she had ever.
And just to go back to something I forgot. So also, you know, related to this social work as well, you also do have you're actually Dr. Eddie Brocklesby. You have a PhD. Mm-hmm. All I could find online about that was that it's kind of related to adoption and contact. What was this research about?
Yes, my PhD was research, and it was fairly near the beginning when a child who had been adopted, their birth parents might have had contact with the adoptive parents. And it was always sort of mediated, if you like, by a social worker. So it was that contact that was absolutely innovatory. It started in New Zealand and, you know, then came over and we did it. But we monitored it fairly carefully as social workers, acting as a mediator and sometimes involving a lawyer too as a mediator. But I think what I find quite worrying is AI now and the ability of people to track each other down without that level of mediation and social worker there to sort of ensure that it was as positive as possible.
That's very interesting. So have you read some stories or cases, have you, about someone that's done that on the news, about someone that's used AI to...
I have spoken to a few people, yes, who have had that experience, and it's not easy. You've got quite complicated issues of why a child may have been placed for adoption in the first place.
So this is something very interesting you've learned from your career. Obviously, this is a big question, given that you've worked with people, you know, in interesting settings for 50 years. So apologies for being vague, but could you tell us maybe a few of the key things you learned about people, if you were able to pick a few that stand out? You know, I've really understood this about people from working with people for so long. Can you think of any things?
One of the big issues for me was learning of the impact on the unborn baby of alcohol, and learning of fetal alcohol syndrome. So the unborn baby is affected by alcohol, particularly, and that's not a fair point, at the very beginning, when mum may not even know that she's pregnant. And I think I then tried to get the drinks industry to sort of take on board the risks there. They weren't that enthusiastic, but to be fair, it was the Daily Mail who did actually a 2-page spread on it with me.
All the things we've been talking about, you've actually had... It's great to see on the table actually here with us now. Maybe you want to hold it up and show the camera. You've put it into this book, Iron Gran. Oh, this book actually, yeah. This book about your life. If you just want to maybe hold it up, people can see it. And I'll put a link to this in the description. So Yeah, can you tell us about this book, Iron Gran, and what, you know, inspired you to write it?
I started to write a chapter about my grandmother, actually, and her history. And then Josephine Perry, who's a sports psychologist and a really good friend, she and I worked together, really. I wrote most of it, but, you know, with a bit of help and advice from Josie. And I think... Well, you know, I'm very grateful to her and her husband, who also is the chair of Silverfit Charity. So.
Is it, what's it like writing a book like that? Does it give you an interesting chance to reflect and think about all your life that you've had? Like, is it a nice experience?
Oh, it was such fun. I wasn't expecting it to be such fun when it was published, but I got a lot of publicity via the publishers, I guess. But, you know, doing Saturday Live when, you know, sitting across the table with Graham Gardner and talking about marathon running, absolutely wonderful opportunities. I got breakfast telly. I had Nick Nagger and Charlie doing press-ups on breakfast telly, which was fun. So, yes, I did enjoy the launch and the publicity around it.
Fantastic. Would you say that there's something stands out in your life, having done all these, you know, things with the charity and exercise and having a family and all the social work? What would you say stands out as kind of the highlight and thing you're most proud of in your life?
That's a difficult one, but I think my family, my children, you know, the fact that I'm still in great contact with them and their children, I'm privileged and I'm the lucky one. I also, of course, experienced the death of my husband when he was only 54, and an awareness from then on that I was the lucky one, and we had the opportunity to discuss making the most of your life.
Yeah. So I'm very sorry to hear that. I read about this online. So you say 54. So this was around. So that was a couple of years after you kind of started doing the running. So did that then really kind of additionally spur you on to, as you say, make the most of every chance and to live?
Yes, without any doubt at all. Right at the very beginning, we were living up in Nottinghamshire, and it was just a small group of 7 or 8 of us who went out running together. And I think that was so important for me, that you could talk if you wanted to talk, but if you didn't feel like it, that was okay too. And I think that was such a valuable experience for me.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Thanks for sharing that. What advice would you give to someone who perhaps they're old, perhaps they're young, perhaps they've not exercised much before, or used to exercise a lot, but have maybe fallen off of it in the last couple of years? What would you say to someone kind of looking to get back into being more active?
I think walking and getting out in the fresh air is so important if you can, alone or preferably with other people if you can. But just if you're walking around the block even, you know, and do it sort of once or twice a week, but build up really, really gently. But I think going outdoors is really important for me.
Yeah, do you think a life of... even just, you know, walking a little bit each week as opposed to not at all can kind of really transform someone's mental health and help them?
Oh, without any doubt, yes. Yes.
A couple of final questions. We talked about some of your future plans with events, but yeah, you know, obviously you've done so many things, writing, your charity. I'm just intrigued. Do you have any more plans for the future with anything else in the next few years?
I'd like to get a cycling challenge or even a walking challenge. I live right opposite Bushy Park and Home Park, which are fabulous, and they're walking along the river too. So I think a challenge that could get a few more people more active, but nothing too serious.
Yeah, and you live in this lovely area in Kingston beside the river. Have you enjoyed living in London for so long? How long have you been in London for?
I lived in Vauxhall, which was fun too, right near the Oval Cricket Ground. And yes, down in Kingston for about the last 5 or 6 years. But I've also got my two of my children live in Kingston.
So there's a final question, something I ask everyone at the end of the episode. Particularly interested to hear you answer, actually, given all of your life experience and social work. Yeah, the question is, what do you think it means to live a good life?
I also have an underpinning Catholic faith, and I think it is important to have a good life and make a contribution to others' lives if you possibly can.
So it's about, maybe the main thing for you is about helping other people. And
yeah.
Okay, well, Eddie, this is really great. I really appreciate your time, and thank you so much, and thanks for being an inspiration to lots of people and for doing all the charity work you've done. And yeah, it's been brilliant to chat.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you enjoy the Human Podcast, please consider subscribing. I hope to see you soon.